to household emergencies, or even managing your long-term schedule with your family and friends or at work. Support is something you need right now to effectively navigate the challenges in your brain and body. Listen to the following story to find out how to manage memory, aging, and concerns about Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. Whitney, not just tired. Whitney said that people were concerned about her memory. She wasn't sure she had any problems. She just thought she was tired. Whitney's adult daughter sat in on the reading. The intuitive reading. When I looked at Whitney's life, it felt like one of those model houses that they have in a new housing development. Everything is staged. Everything is sterile. None of the furniture seems personal. I had a hard time seeing anything personal on the walls of her house as I intuitively looked around. If the people's personal effects had been in the house, it was as if they were taken away. I couldn't see a picture of a spouse. I couldn't see pictures of children. Was Whitney experiencing some loss? I could only see the bare bones evidence of somebody living in a house. The body. Whitney seemed generally healthy. However, she seemed to be having problems with focus and attention, and there weren't a lot of ideas flowing in her mind. I had a hard time following her train of thought. Usually, when I do a reading, I can feel what someone's worried about, whether they're concerned about work, kids, family. However, when it came to Whitney, I couldn't see details about her life flowing in and out of her head. There was just this space, just as uncrowded as the house I saw earlier in the reading. The facts. Whitney said she had always prided herself on keeping her health and her appearance pristine and staying active. However, lately, she had had a series of losses. Her partner had died 5 years earlier of cancer, and her two children had moved to the other side of the country. She had taken an early retirement package from her teaching job and moved into a retirement community. Since that time, Whitney had felt tired, not really wanting to do activities with other residents. Soon, her family became concerned. They said there was something different about her conversation. She couldn't get her words out. It seemed like the word she wanted was always on the tip of her tongue. Whitney did admit she was hanging out less with people at parties because she was having trouble following conversations. Her family had her check her hearing, but it was normal. Lately, she had gotten depressed, overwhelmed, and anxious in the late afternoons. Her family pointed this out to her, but she just thought she was getting tired. Recently, a neurologist told her that her memory showed the very early signs of Alzheimer's disease and suggested medication. Whitney had never taken any medication before, not even for cholesterol or blood pressure, since her health had always been, as I said, pristine. She and her family wanted to know what was available to help sharpen up her mind and buffer her brain against possible memory disorders like Alzheimer's disease. What to do if you think you're losing your memory? Go to a neurologist who will evaluate you to find out what is the source of your memory disorder, whether it's injury, as in the last case, nutritional problems, or body chemical abnormalities. The physician will tease out the multiple factors that are unraveling your memory networks. In addition, the memory team may be able to determine if depression, as in Section 1 of this clinic, anxiety, Section 2, or trauma, Section 3, further contributes to your memory loss. They will evaluate your medicine list and assess whether alcohol or another substance is compounding your memory loss. Usually, after teasing out all these factors, a skilled professional will be able to determine if part of your memory problem is really truly Alzheimer's disease, mild cognitive impairment, or some other brain disorder. Is it my mood or my memory? Don't fall into the trap where people are going to say you're just depressed and you don't have a memory problem. It's all in your head. Depression in itself, if untreated, increases your risk for losing your memory, either from small strokes in your brain or from Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia. If you are in the midst of grief from the loss of a partner or a parent or a child leaving home, the dramatic change in neurotransmitters in your brain and body may set the scene for brain fog and a sense of memory loss that's similar to Alzheimer's disease but is not Alzheimer's disease, Section 1 of this clinic. In addition, severe trauma such as physical, emotional, or sexual abuse or post-traumatic stress disorder releases cortisol, which equally gums up the memory apparatus in the hippocampus, Section 2. However, by aggressively treating the disorders addressed in those cases, mood, irritability, anxiety, and trauma, you are reducing your risk for dementia. Brain changes associated with memory problems. When it comes to understanding the treatments for memory problems, it's important to understand the brain changes associated with diseases that cause memory loss. When we experience normal aging, which I might add is not a disease, memory changes from our early life. The most obvious difference is that we may retrieve memory at a slower rate. The mildest memory disorder, or perhaps memory disease, is mild cognitive impairment. And then, people describe Alzheimer's disease in terms of a range of severity, early, moderate, and severe. Perhaps by the time you're listening to this book, the names will be different. Brain science as a field is rapidly changing. To diagnose memory problems, physicians and scientists are looking at proteins that can be found in the brain that has Alzheimer's or other memory disorders. In Alzheimer's disease, scientists are currently looking at a protein, amyloid beta precursor protein, that affects learning and memory. Scientists are looking for forms of amyloid protein in the blood and brain fluid to see if they can detect increased levels in people who have early stages of Alzheimer's disease. Similarly, scans are being developed to show if we, the potential patient, may have abnormal amounts of this protein built up in our brain and whether or not those levels are somehow related to memory symptoms, indicating the presence of Alzheimer's disease, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, brain injury, or some other memory disorder. However, an important note, though these tests may be performed on an experimental basis in several major medical centers, the same physicians who are designing the tests have a big problem. What is it? They are trying to create a diagnostic test to determine if you have Alzheimer's disease, but they don't know what to do or how to treat you if they find you do. Western medicine doesn't have a potent treatment to treat Alzheimer's disease if a test were to prove you have it. So should you have the test? Some physicians and scientists say that if you were to get a positive result, it would help you with the planning of your life. Other scientists and physicians suggest that by working with these proteins and scans, it may help them down the road devise treatments directed against those purported proteins that seem to be at the scene of the crime, near the injury in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. You don't need to have one of those scans to find out that you may have a progressive illness of memory. After getting a neuropsychological assessment for learning and memory, an MRI, and perhaps blood tests to rule out reversible causes of memory loss, you'll be able to elucidate to what degree you may have a deterioration of the networks in your brain, memory, or otherwise. Consider the solutions below, but I don't know if I would want someone with one of those scans with data that they're only in the early stages of understanding to tell me what my future is going to be like. And though someone may argue that it's important to plan one's future, how can one really know what the future is? The course of any illness, such as cancer, lupus, chronic fatigue, Lyme, or even Alzheimer's disease or mild cognitive changes, is different for one person than another, depending on their diet, their treatment for depression, their capacity for exercise, or changes in how they conduct their lives. So I'm not going to describe in this book what happens to a person when they're mild or moderately or severely impaired with this disorder and what the usual course is. Suffice it to say that in the milder forms of Alzheimer's disease, you may be able to conduct your life as usual with more support from your friends and family, but in the more severe forms, you will have trouble dressing and taking care of yourself and need a lot more support. In the milder forms, you may forget names, misplace items, not remember recent events, but people, secretaries, spouses will be able to cue or remind you. However, in the more severe form, it will become essential that others run your financial and day-to-day physical care. It's your mind, and with the help and support of your treatment team, the physicians, acupuncturists, naturopaths, cognitive behavioral therapists, spiritual counselors, families, and loved ones, you're going to create wholeness and revive to the best of your ability the circuits in your brain. After your tests, what's the point of getting all these tests? As of this writing, Western medicine, as I've said, has very limited options for medicines to treat mild cognitive impairment versus mild to moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease. Currently available drugs like Aricept and others may at best show some improvement in daily function, but they don't appear to slow the course of the illness. On the other hand, there are other treatments that do seem to lessen its impact or progression. The best treatments for memory disorders that involve dementia are ones that impact inflammation and cardiovascular disease. Science shows us that many of the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease are the same ones that involve cardiovascular disease. For example, APOE4 is a risk factor for both cholesterol problems and Alzheimer's disease. Namenda is a medicine that decreases inflammation and may help with the early to moderate stages of Alzheimer's disease. In addition, coenzyme Q10, alpha-tocotrienol, and other high-potency anti-inflammatories may help with the inflammatory basis behind degenerative memory problems. The solution. In addition to the suggestions above, consider the following steps to improve your brain circuits. Reduce stress and cortisol. Many of the long-term stressors in our lives help accelerate the onset of memory loss, as well as the progression of memory degenerative disorder. If you've had a loss of a loved one or the empty house syndrome, you want to fill your house and your life with loved ones. If you can't find them, create them. Go to your nearest spiritual centers or recreational centers. Volunteer, create prosthetic family members when your own have left this world. The stress of untreated grief enhances long-term changes in the hippocampus and other areas of the brain that may disrupt memory function. Grow memory circuits. If you want to increase your capacity for memory, you want to promote lifelong learning and change. So you need to add mental, emotional, and social stimulation to your life. Yes, any amount of change and new learning is to some degree stressful. So if you have problems with social anxiety, phobia, grief, or sadness, go to your nearest mental health center and get someone who knows cognitive behavioral therapy or supportive therapy to help you handle the emotional and social factors that complicate memory loss. Use medical intuition to improve your memory. On a piece of paper, draw 7 circles, one above the other. Label those centers 1 through 7 from the bottom up. From a medical intuitive point of view, we have 7 centers in our life. When we have an accumulation of losses in our lives, these centers start to empty out. So on your diagram, write the number 14% next to each circle. Why? Because if you have a loss in any area of your life, you've lost 1/7 of your life, or 14%. So, for example, if you've lost loved ones, a partner, a husband or a wife, you've just lost 14% in your second center. Have you retired? You just lost your third center, another 14%. Has your family moved away? Have other family members died? First center, yet another 14%. So let's add that up. 42% of your life has, in essence, died. That's almost half of your life that has leapt, creating a gaping hole, a sense of emptiness. Center by center, use medical intuition to take account of all the losses or vacancies in your life. These are the centers you now have to reconstitute by transplanting new people and experiences into your life. In this way, you'll also begin to reconstitute your mind-body health, not to mention your memory, by adding or transplanting groups of people who are, in a way, families or center. You add nutrients of belonging to support your brain chemistry away from depression and anxiety. By having some kind of avocation, work, or purpose that challenges your mind and body, third center, you release opiates and dopamine, neurochemicals of reward that may keep your learning and memory centers operational. And finally, being open to the possibility of a relationship after a lost love, second center, or even surrounding yourself with buddies and friends, provides you social support freedom from anxiety that may help buffer cortisol levels in your brain and further protect your memory machinery. And while you're at it, have a trusted advisor, counselor, or family member help you determine if there's any residual sadness, panic, or trauma from these losses that may also impact your memory. Other remedies. Please go to the other sections in this chapter on how to build your memory by learning how to reduce inflammation and promote the production of acetylcholine, GABA, serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, and other neurotransmitters. Consider following all the other suggestions to improve your memory, whether it's acupuncture, hyperbaric oxygen, or evaluating your med list to see if there may be deleterious substances that are gumming up your brain circuits. All of these suggestions may promote improvement of memory. Consider getting a pet or a plant that you need to take care of every day. Studies suggest that even patients with moderate dementia in nursing homes have improved memory scores when they have to take care of something living. In addition to supplements like acetyl-L-carnitine, CPD choline, vitamin E, DHA, folic acid, B6 and B12, Siberian ginseng, ginkgo biloba, and zinc, you might want to consider huperzine A, 60 to 200 micrograms per day. This Chinese moss may raise acetylcholine activity and has been shown to improve memory in Alzheimer's disease, normal aging, and multi-infarct dementia. Similar to Aricept, this supplement may increase memory, neural network efficiency, and help prevent nerve cell death. Natural forms of this substance may be 3 to 4 times more potent than synthetic forms. For dosages for all these supplements and herbs, go to the previous cases in this clinic. The affirmations. We're all concerned to some degree about maintaining a healthy mind and memory, not to mention a healthy body, as we age. Louise asks you to evaluate the following list of thoughts. Growing old frightens me. What if I have a painful death? I'll never be able to face old age. Everyone in my family seems to get dementia. It's hopeless. I'm afraid of the future. I'm no longer wanted. There's no support left in my life. I need to control everything around me. I give up. Louise offers a variety of affirmations to help us change a mindset that can fossilize our brain circuits and make it hard for us to have healthy memory throughout our life. For memory, divine protection, safety, and peace, the intelligence of the universe operates at every level of my life. For aging, I love and accept myself at every age, at every moment of my life. For Alzheimer's disease in particular, which is a refusal to deal with the world as it is, hopelessness, helplessness, and anger, there is always a new and better way to see and experience life. I forgive and release the past and move into joy. For the thought pattern, I'm afraid of getting old. Every age has its infinite possibilities. My age is perfect, and I enjoy every new moment. If you are suffering from memory symptoms or difficulty operating your brain efficiently, and effectively in your life right now after using all the solutions in this chapter, I trust the process of life. I am on an endless journey through eternity. When it comes to accessing all of our potential in our mind from memory, consider this affirmation. The point of power is always in the present moment. Chapter 6. Body, Mind, Brain. Much of my career as a medical intuitive and neuropsychiatrist is spent uncovering the ways in which certain emotions are associated with physical illnesses. What I found, ironically, especially as a psychiatrist, is that often someone will come to a doctor feeling anxious and depressed for the first time in their life, and there seems to be no reason why they're feeling that emotion. They're not worried about their family, relationship, or work, and they don't seem to have grief about the death of a loved one, a failed marriage, or the loss of a job. And then, after a physical exam and some basic tests, we find out that they have a health problem in their body. That anxiety, irritability, sadness was the first and only symptom that alerted anyone to the presence of a serious health problem, whether it was an autoimmune problem, hormonal imbalance such as thyroid insufficiency, adrenal gland abnormality, estrogen, testosterone, or other hormonal problems. Brain fog, moodiness, and memory problems may have been the first warning signs that they had a serious digestive problem, cardiac or lung problem, brain disorder, or even cancer of some kind. Everyone has heard these kinds of scenarios. A person is anxious, tired, nervous, and just a little achy, and has problems paying attention after years of feeling more or less normal. The person goes to the doctor and gets treated for depression. The medicine or nutritional supplements doesn't work. Finally, someone runs tests and the person is diagnosed with lupus. Or, a man feels sad, insecure about a recent failed marriage and bankruptcy. He's irritable and moody, feels guilty, and is constantly apologizing. He goes to the doctor and gets treated for depression with nutritional supplements, herbs, and medicine. They don't work, and he still feels depressed, guilty, sad, and weak. Someone checks his testosterone levels and finds out they're very low. After replacement of his testosterone, though he's still sad about his bankruptcy and failed marriage and is working it through in therapy, he's in a better place to handle his thoughts and reconstitute his life. Or, we feel nervous and edgy and have more and more problems focusing and paying attention at work. Because we are in our 50s, we think it's just changes in estrogen and progesterone. So we get treatment for the moodiness and irritability that accompany the change. However, after 8 months, we still feel uneasy, tense, and panicky, and our brain is in a daze. A gastroenterologist tests us for bacterial overgrowth in our small intestine, as well as celiac disease, and finds out we have both disorders. After going on a special diet and reducing the buildup of endotoxins in our gut and throughout our system, including the blood, we become calm, collected, and focused. Or, someone goes to the emergency room with nervousness out of the blue when they've never had panic attacks before in their life. They're discharged. 4 hours later, they go back to the emergency room with the same amount of panic. And an astute doctor orders a scan of their lungs and finds out they have clots, a condition called pulmonary embolism. Or a woman gets anxiety, feels stressed, with butterflies in her stomach. She goes to a doctor who sends her to the emergency room, and after EKG and cursory tests, which are negative, she's told it's just stress and anxiety. The scenario is repeated on 3 consecutive weekends, and though the woman has never had an abnormal EKG, an astute nurse tests her heart enzymes to look for a more serious heart ailment. The result comes back positive and shows she's having a heart attack, or you are nervous, anxious, and depressed in your sophomore year at college, and you have trouble paying attention in your classes. It feels like there's a lump in your throat and your heart is racing just a little bit. You go to the health center and they say you're stressed about school. You take a semester off with the same symptoms, and your parents get you treatment for a panic disorder. In some scenarios, you may even drop out of school completely, thinking that you just can't handle it because your panic is so severe. A decade or two will go by, and you'll have a variety of vague symptoms, including tense muscles, heart racing, problems paying attention, and of course the panic, all of which you'll treat with medicines, nutritional supplements, herbs, and so on. No one will really think there's anything wrong with your health until you're 35 and you fracture your wrist, develop osteoporosis, and begin to lose your teeth. An astute healthcare practitioner finds out you've had a parathyroid disorder for decades and that all your symptoms can be accounted for by calcium problems, including the emotional and physical symptoms of panic, not to mention the fracture and the loss of your teeth. Last but not least, you're getting ready to go on a Caribbean cruise with your partner, and you start to feel nervous. You go to your GP, and they notice you're having a bit of a respiratory issue. They think you just need rest, and it might be your asthma kicking up. Just take your inhaler on the ship, relax, and you'll be fine. So you go on the cruise, feeling tired and still nervous, no matter how much you rest. Then, on the way home, you develop clots in your legs, deep vein thrombosis, or DVT. You go to the emergency room, and they find out you have lung cancer. In each of these cases, the first symptom of physical illness was an emotion. Applying mind-body medicine. Much has been written in the last 3 to 4 decades on mind-body medicine. People are always talking about how their mind affects their body, the so-called mind over matter. In this chapter, we're going to talk about how the body affects the mind, how your body, through illness, may be the precipitant of a mood, anxiety, irritability, anger, attention, or memory problem. Theoretically, we would think this concept that we're talking about, the mind can affect the body can affect the mind, would be easy to comprehend and ultimately utilize to create health. Not so much. Why? For one, when you explain to people that depression, anxiety, irritability, or anger, when held for a long time, can increase their chance toward health problems, people feel blamed. And when people have health problems that are made worse by changes in neurotransmitters associated with mood problems like serotonin, epinephrine, GABA, and opiates, they feel blamed again. Or worse yet, when you tell someone, or when I myself am told, that the pain, the headaches, the IBS, the seizures, and whatever the health problem is, can be made worse by the anxiety or depression. You really hear, you're telling me it's all in my head. And you'll tend not to want to go to that practitioner anymore. And when it comes to this chapter, body, mind, medicine, why is it equally hard to comprehend and ultimately use? Because when we present with a pure symptom like anxiety or depression or irritability or anger, the majority of professionals are likely to think that the symptom is purely in our head and probably not generated by a health problem in our body. The title of this book is Heal Your Mind, Your Prescription for Wholeness Through Medicine, Affirmations, and Intuition. If the mind is made up of one's brain and body, then health concerns occur simultaneously in both. It's easy to say, is it in my head or is it in my body? Is this structural or is it emotional? Is this depression or is this Lyme? Is this anxiety or is this mercury poisoning? Is this anger or is this heart disease? Is this grief and sadness or a precancerous condition? We must see that it's neither one nor the other. Both conditions occur simultaneously. Ways of looking at body, mind, brain. I've been in the field of medical intuition for over 30 years. After I outline the emotional issues in someone's life that I see aggravate their health, and then illuminate the symptoms in their body that are causing them dis-ease, more often than not, people say to me, Dr. Monglisa, you don't understand. My problem isn't in my head, it's in my body. I say, I know, it's both. It's because your head is part of your body. In this chapter, you are going to learn to heal in two major ways. Using medical intuition, you will learn how certain emotional patterns are associated with certain physical symptoms in the body. And when it comes to healing the mind, you will learn to create wholeness by treating both the brain and the body, by learning that the brain may be the first sign that a major illness is beginning to brew in the body. So if you've had new or even chronic depression, irritability, moodiness, anxiety, and problems with attention, brain fog, memory, and addiction, this chapter is for you. You may just get the key to some additional solutions for finding peace and using your potential. Louise Hay's first book, Heal Your Body, lays out the mental causes for physical illnesses and the metaphysical ways to overcome them. Note that Louise never makes a distinction between brain and body. Despite the book's title, among the listed disorders, ailments of the brain are never listed separately from the ailments of the body. Allergies are listed alongside Alzheimer's. You'll see amnesia next to anemia. To think that fear, anger, sadness, and deficiency in love and joy are somehow separate from anemia, Alzheimer's, pain and suffering seems pretty reasonable. Back then, in the 70s, she equated body and mind, brain and body, physical health, and emotional health. It's taken up to 40 years to catch up. Maybe we're still trying to. According to Louise, if you have a health problem, it's considered an excess of fear, anger, or sadness, or a deficiency in love and joy. And this can be changed with a new thought pattern. For example, say you have a problem with depression. According to Louise, the thought pattern behind this is apathy, a resistance to feeling, a deadening of self, fear. So you change that thought pattern to, it is safe to feel, I open myself to life, I am willing to experience life. In a way, what Louise is doing to change the thought patterns in depression is very similar to what we do in cognitive behavioral therapy in psychiatry today. She addresses a body problem in the same way. We simply look at the thought pattern, find the affirmation, and change our reasoning. For example, cardiovascular disease. Louise says cardiovascular disease has to do with difficulty carrying the joy of life, a deficiency in joy. So, to lessen your tendency toward that, you would change the thought pattern by doing the affirmation, I am filled with joy. It flows with me in every beat in my heart, and so on. According to Louise, whether there's a problem in the mind or the body, the therapeutic solution is the same. You find the unhealthy thought pattern, the excess or deficient emotion. You change the thought. You add the emotion that's missing, usually joy or love, and you move on to health. If you were a sophisticated scientist who'd spent years in brain science, neuroanatomy, or had done a psychiatric residency, or accumulated, say, $275,000 in student loans, who might that be? You might think that that was simplistic and whistle an offense. You might even say to yourself the audacity of this woman to think that such a simple method would work. However, then during your training in psychiatry, if you figured it out, this is me, you would find that the father of cognitive behavioral therapy, Aaron Beck, devised treatment plans to change people's thoughts. And this is the basis behind how cognitive behavioral therapy is done in psychiatry today. The protocols or recipes of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, are similar statements, though more convoluted, to the one Louise Hay uses in her slim book, Statements to Treat Anxiety, Depression, and Anger. And we know now in the 21st century that many of these emotions, if sustained, increase our chance toward a variety of unrelenting health problems such as health disease, cancers, dementia, diabetes, obesity, chronic pain, immune system disorders, and the like. The science of medical intuition, how emotions become health problems and health problems become emotions. Emotions register as symptoms in your body, and the beginning of illness in your body may be first noticed only as an emotion like fear, anger, sadness, or brain fog. In Chapter 1, we talked about an emotional disease domino effect in which if an emotion or mood is held for very long, it sets off cascades of inflammatory mediators. If you feel long-term depression, anxiety, panic, or sadness, the mood gets transferred to your brainstem or your adrenal gland, epinephrine and cortisol are released, then inflammatory mediators like cytokines and others cause a domino effect of changes in your body. Fever, weakness, lethargy, then a virus or allergy, then over time, hormonal changes, arthritis, cholesterol, insulin, blood pressure and weight problems, addiction, and other body problems spiral out of control. Similarly, if you have a health problem in your body, there is a disease mood domino effect. Whether it's an overgrowth in bacteria in your bowel, with a release of inflammation molecules, endotoxins that leak into your blood and then travel into your brain, making you feel depressed, anxious, or irritable, or inflammatory mediators such as tumor necrosa factor alpha and others of rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune disorders leaking out from your achy joints into your blood system, into your brain, causing you to feel lethargic, weepy, tearful, irritable, edgy, and snappy. You may not even know you're having another flare-up of your autoimmune problem until you get in an argument out of the blue with a loved one over nothing, really. Then you realize you're sick again and that the only sign to you that your joint problem is going south is that switch in your mood. And finally, you may be in remission for your lung cancer, sailing through life with utter relief. When out of the blue, you feel depressed. Even though you're tearful and have brain fog, you take a fearless inventory of your life to find out what might be depressing you, and you don't find anything, only to go to your next checkup and have your doctor find out you have a tiny tumor in your lung. Your doctor says you have a disorder that comes along with cancer called a paraneoplastic syndrome that releases chemicals from your lung into your blood that travel to your brain and make you feel depressed and act loopy. In all of these cases in which there is a body-brain domino effect, mood, anxiety, irritability, and attention problems were only the first symptom that intuitively pointed out to you that something was up in your body. In this chapter, Louise and I want to help you truly create wholeness in your mind. To really heal our mind and create wholeness, we need to heal the brain and the body simultaneously. Healing the mind, in fact, is understanding that the body and mind are merely parts of one whole being. So if you've had short-term or even long-term depression, irritability, moodiness, or anxiety problems, not to mention short or long-term health problems, step into the All Is Well clinic. By addressing those aspects in your body that may also be affecting your mood, sense of peace, and capacity to use all of your intellect, you will be on your path to total healing. The All Is Well Clinic. If you want to know another way of solving your depression, panic, attention, addiction, learning, and memory problems, these case studies ahead are for you. We're going to look to the body to find out what health problems may be making your mind disorder worse. Whether you have immune system problems or a hormonal, digestive, weight, cardiovascular, or other disorder, there's always some element of a health problem in our body, below our neck, that's affecting the function of our brain. Part 1. Immune disorders, adrenal gland function, and the brain. Have you been concerned about your immune system, whether it's allergy, autoimmune problems, or infections? Have you been concerned about adrenal gland function, whether it's fatigue, weight gain, or other problems? Ask yourself if you have the following problems. You've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, or chronic fatigue, or some other virus or bacterial infection, such as Lyme disease or others. You have allergies that influence your skin, digestion, and respiratory tract, to name but a few. You've been diagnosed with a variety of autoimmune disorders like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, Hashimoto's, Graves' disease, or others. You have fatigue or infections. You have weight gain in the central part of your body. You have moodiness or irritability. You have striae, or lines in your skin. You easily bruise. You have a host of peculiar symptoms of fatigue, joint achiness, and vague physical complaints that are hard to describe. If you have anxiety, depression, irritability, brain fog, and problems with your memory, in addition to many of the above symptoms, consider the following reading. Abigail, paralyzed by anxiety. Abigail, 37, called me for a reading. She was having problems with new depression and paralyzing anxiety. The intuitive reading. Abigail appeared to be in one of those dead-end relationships. She seemed to pick the wrong man over and over again. A man who wasn't there for her. Worse yet, the man she picked cheated on her. Abigail's brain and body seemed to have a backlog of depression from a series of failed relationships. However, she also seemed to have the nervousness, the anxiety, and the jitters of someone who was waiting for the next tragedy to happen in her life. The body. I noticed problems with focus, attention, and brain fog. However, the most significant aspect of Abigail's body to me was that her immune system seemed to be on fire. Was this her immune system's capacity to make antibodies against several organs? I saw red dots on her joints, skin, thyroid, and bowel. And did Abigail have problems with her fertility, making it hard for her to have children? Her hormones seemed to go up and down, up and down, and that seemed to parallel her moods. The facts. Abigail told me that the doctors had picked up antibodies in her blood for lupus and Addison's disease, low adrenal gland function. She had diffuse joint pain as well as multiple medical problems from both autoimmune disorders. In addition to the joint pain, kidney, thyroid, and low cortisol levels she had from both of these immune system disorders, Abigail suffered from anxiety and depression that no medicine could treat. She wanted to know, was it her hormones, estrogen and progesterone? Were Abigail's anxiety and depression symptoms generated from her brain in response to a series of failed relationships and lifelong trauma? Or were her anxiety and depression due to her lupus and Addison's disease, the inflammation from her low cortisol and inflammation from autoimmune attack on her joints, kidneys, and hormonal organs? The answer is both. In order for Abigail to heal, she had to create a prescription that addressed her whole being, both her brains and her body's symptoms. Let's first address the adrenal gland mood and anxiety. Adrenal gland and mood. If you have the deficient cortisol of Addison's disease or the excess cortisol of Cushing syndrome, either extreme can increase your chance toward anxiety, depression, and brain fog. It seems ironic that too much and too little of the same hormone can both cause depression and anxiety, but it's true. And, while we're at it, the same can be true for other hormones as well, including estrogen, thyroid, and others. Specifically, estrogen. Estrogen excess, either from excess body fat stores or from hormone replacement, is notorious for causing depression. Too little estrogen, especially the sudden change of hormone levels in menopause and postpartum, can cause depression too. So it seems that too little or too much of any hormone in our body can disrupt the intricate emotional circuitry in our brain's limbic system. But there's more. Every single day, hormones are released in our brain and body according to a circadian rhythm. All of our hormones are keyed in to the ups and downs of cortisol. That means the adrenal gland is in charge, in a way, of all your other hormones. The normal rhythm is for cortisol to be high in the morning and low at night. If you have the reverse pattern, low levels of cortisol in the morning and high levels at night, you're more likely to have depression. So, if you're just testing your cortisol levels at one time of the day versus the other, that's not going to help you. In the end, we want balance. We want to establish a normal rhythm and ebb and flow of hormones in our brain and body throughout the whole day. But let's move on to the immune system and mood. Immune system disorders and mood. There are many areas in our emotional brain that biochemically act in the same way as our immune system. What does that mean? It means that when our immune system gets fired up, whether through infection, allergy, or autoimmune problems, it may affect our mood. If we were to get lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, a chronic infection like Lyme, chronic fatigue, or fibromyalgia, food allergy, psoriasis, or eczema, the inflammation in our body would be more likely to irritate our mood, increasing our chance toward depression, anxiety, brain fog, memory problems, maybe even addiction. So understand, if you are being treated for any or all of these disorders, we have to follow the title of that famous book by Joan Borisenko. We need to simultaneously mind the body and mend the mind. Cortisol has a tremendous impact on our immune system. On the one hand, doctors give us steroids, a form of cortisol, to lower the inflammation in autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriasis, and others. You may even now be using glandulars or other ways of supplementing adrenal gland cortisol naturally. On the other hand, when we are anxious, panicky, or depressed, those hormones can get transmitted to our adrenal gland, causing the adrenal gland to release unhealthy levels of cortisol. Those stress-related changes and our adrenal gland cortisol release can ironically elicit an infection, an allergy, an autoimmune illness, or something more serious. Listen to the other sections in this chapter. But chances are, if you have adrenal gland problems, you have immune system problems. If you have immune system problems, you have adrenal gland problems. And ultimately, if you have adrenal gland and immune system problems, you are also more likely to have depression, anxiety, irritability, and problems with focus and memory, not to mention addiction. So whether you have adrenal gland problems, or what people are currently calling adrenal gland fatigue cortisol, either in excess or in deficiency, is likely to cause you depression, anxiety, and panic. If you have a chronic infection like Lyme, Epstein-Barr virus, fibromyalgia, chronic allergies, environmental illness, you aren't just prone to pain, fatigue, and sleepiness. You're also more prone to problems with depression, anxiety, brain fog, and attention and memory. But there's hope. If we treat both brain and body simultaneously, both mood and immunity, pain and panic, attention and agony, emotional and physical madness may improve. The medical intuitive solution. What is the solution? How do you support the brain and the body simultaneously? First, do a medical intuitive reading on your life. What is your body telling you about what in your life or in the life of a loved one needs to change? Start your medical intuitive reading in the following way. Draw a large box and label it body. In the box, draw 7 circles, one above the other. Label them 1 through 7 from the bottom up. Where in your body is the immune system giving you symptoms? Refer to the chart of energy centers in the book All Is Well.